Okay? If you have ever tried to write a narrative, you know what I'm talking about. You have all of this information you think that the reader has to have. How are you going to present it? Oh, my father, when he was 16, did blah, 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 blah. But I really don't want to talk about when he was 16. I want to talk about now when he's 82. So how does that happen? Okay? One way that it can happen is to make it subordinate within the small structure that then does not threaten the large structure of your poem. In a shoebox stuffed in an old nylon stocking sleeps the baby mouse I found in the meadow, where he trembled and shook beneath a stick till I caught him by the tail and brought him in, cradled in my hand. Now we're back where the shoebox is, but we're not back there in the moment of time yet, because a little Quaker, the whole body of him trembling. This was before. Now he's asleep. Before, he was trembling. And I'm going to stay there with him trembling a very long time. And how do I do that? I just make my little mobile. I'm just coming off of that subordinate syntax, right? And I can go as long as I want to go. His absurd whiskers sticking out like a cartoon mouse. His feet like small leaves. Parallelism. Right, we went right branching over there to get the where. We have a hypotactic sentence because all of this is subordinate to that fundament. And now we're going to make the brain relax, relax, relax brain, relax brain. We give you all these things that are exactly parallel in their grammatical function. Okay, a little Quaker, the whole body of him trembling, his absurd whiskers sticking out like a cartoon mouse. His feet like small leaves, little lizard feet, whitish and spread wide, when he tried to struggle away. And there's another subordination, right? Because I want to pick up this other moment in time. But I don't want you to be lost about where you are, what you're looking at, and what happened when, and what is the most important thing. The most important thing in this sentence is that the mouse is now asleep. And all of this is the backstory and how he trembled. Look, too, at all of those, we have those parallel things lined up to modify him. And again, as with Maeve Brennan, they're not all the same length. The whole body of him trembling, his absurd whiskers sticking out like a cartoon mouse, his feet like small leaves, little lizard feet, whitish and spread wide when he tried to struggle away, wriggling like a minuscule puppy. You see how all of that's attached to that last one. So with syntax, you get to satisfy your formal pleasures because you get pattern and variation exactly the same time. There's pattern in the grammatical function of the parts, and there's variation in the length of each one of those phrases that you are processing, each chunk that your brain is managing. And Rethke helps us out by using line breaks that don't break anything. What they do is they parse it. They reinforce it. It's like another punctuation to have the end of that line out there that is consonant throughout, pretty much consonant with the units that already exist as chunks within the syntax. So it makes it easy for the reader's brain. Reader's brain goes, oh, I know exactly where I am at every single point. Now he has eaten. He sleeps in the shoebox. Now he has eaten. This is only the second sentence. So we've had two fundaments, right? The baby mouse sleeps, that's the first one, and he has eaten, there's the second one. And it's that moment in time. Are we lost? No. We could put out a timeline, when I first found him, you know, when I brought him in, how he trembled, then he started to eat, then he's going to end up asleep, right? But it's all managed in terms of what's foreground, what's background, what's subordinate, and what is present. The other thing that he's doing in here is, you might start to notice already the way he's working with pairs of things. We have a mouse and a lizard and a puppy. We have three things with the figuration in that first one. We have trembled and shook, which is a pair. We have caught him by the tail and brought him in, which is a pair. Now he's eaten and drunk. So that's another pair, right? So he's preparing something in there. The opening part of this poem is going back and forth, is pulled back and forth between two, between pairs of things, and three, a little trio of things. Now he's eaten his three kinds of cheese and drunk from his bottle cap watering trough so much he just lies in one corner. There's another subordinate clause, right? It's subordinate. It's not the subject of the sentence. It's not the main thing. He just lies in one corner. His tail, his belly, his head, his ears. His tail curled under him, his belly big as his head, his bat-like ears twitching, tilting toward the least sound. So we get the ones that are exactly alike, and then that last one that is extended. Okay? We've only had two sentences. Here comes the next one, made differently. Do I imagine? Do I imagine? I imagine. There's the fundament, and it's turned around, as it's always turned around in question. Do I imagine what subordinate clause? He no longer trembles. Another subordinate clause. When I come close to him. Do I imagine he no longer trembles when I come close to him? Hypotactic. One thing more important than another. He seems no longer to tremble. Don't you feel that in your stomach? Do I imagine he no longer trembles when I come close to him? He seems no longer to tremble. That's that great formal pleasure that we heard at the end of Maeve Bremen's paragraph. But this morning, so here we are. We have to have number two because we have another present moment. First present moment, baby mouse sleeping in the shoebox. Next present moment, the shoebox on the back porch is empty. But this morning, the shoebox house on the back porch is empty. Where has he gone? My meadow mouse, my thumb of a child that nuzzled in my palm. Two things. Where has he gone? Two appositives. Where has he gone? Who is the he? My meadow mouse, my thumb of a child. But they're not the same in length. They're not the same in musical phrase. One is short, one is long. My meadow mouse, my thumb of a child that nuzzled in my palm. To run under the hawk's wing, under the eye of the great owl watching from the elm tree. You hear that? Again, it's parallel, right? To run where? Two places. Under A and under B. But A is real short and B is long. Do you feel that asymmetry? To run under the hawk's wing, under the eye of the great owl watching from the elm tree. To live, to run, to live. That's another parallelism. You see, so those two great ways of making a sentence. Right branching, or if you want to think of mobile, hanging things underneath the main thing, which is the fundament. And the other is the parallelism. Putting the things exactly there, equally important. To run under the hawk's wing, under the eye of the great owl watching from the elm tree, to live by courtesy of three things, the shrike, the snake, the tomcat, the shrike, the snake, the tomcat. And he does the same thing there, real little, because of snake, shrike, tomcat. Okay? So he does it rhythmically, the same thing that he's been doing syntactically. I think of what? I think of what? I think of three things. I think of one, the nestling fallen into the deep grass. I think of two, the turtle gasping in the dusty rubble of the highway. You feel that right branching? You see all those prepositions? I think of three, the paralytic stunned in the tub and the water rising. All things, innocent, hapless, forsaken. All things, innocent, hapless, forsaken. There it is. In a shoebox stuffed in an old nylon stocking sleeps the baby mouse I found in the meadow where he trembled and shook beneath a stick till I caught him up by the tail and brought him in. Cradled in my hand, a little Quaker, the whole body of him trembling, his absurd whiskers sticking out like a cartoon mouse, his feet like small leaves, little lizard feet, whitish and spread wide when he tried to struggle away, wriggling like a minuscule puppy. Now he's eaten his three kinds of cheese and drunk from his bottle cap watering trough so much he just lies in one corner, his tail curled under him, his belly big as his head, his bat-like ears twitching, tilting toward the least sound. Do I imagine he no longer trembles when I come close to him? He seems no longer to tremble. But this morning, the shoebox house on the back porch is empty. Where has he gone, my meadow mouse, my thumb of a child that nuzzled in my palm? To run under the hawk's wing, under the eye of the great owl watching from the elm tree, to live by courtesy of the shrike, the snake, the tomcat. I think of the nestling fallen into the deep grass, the turtle gasping in the dusty rubble of the highway, the paralytic stunned in the tub and the water rising, all things innocent, hapless, forsaken. Okay, so the management of the sentence being a small structure, right? Order, sentence is all about, syntax is the order of the words in the sentence. So it's in the sentence that you determine the order in which you release information to the reader. And in this case, he's using that, turning it around so that we set it up as this lyric situation, this lyric dilemma, and he still manages to go back and give us all of the backstory that we need. We couldn't cut it out. You wouldn't want to cut it out because that juxtaposition of the outdoors that the mouse is rescued from and then the outdoors that it returns to, right? That becomes the huge overall structure of the poem, right? Those two things. So we've got to keep that. We've got to find out that earlier stuff. But when does the reader need it? If you tell the reader first, yesterday I went out walking and I was in the meadow and I saw a little mouse. And so I picked him up and I put him in my palm and he was really trembling. He was shaking all over. And then I brought him in. You see, those are not important actions, because they have no consequence. They have no consequence. They're not important actions. So to give your poem over to that kind of narrative structure when you have no story to tell is to create a structure that is not useful. This is a lyric poem. This is the dilemma of trying to protect something that you can't. Not just the mouse, right? Not just the mouse, but the paralytic stunned in the tub. All things. All things. All things. Okay, any questions about that? About how the sentences are working? Yes.
I'm interested. You say that he breaks like a comma.
Well, it did. Can one use a line break like a comma? You mean instead of a comma?
Yes.
It depends on what else you've done. I mean, if you've set up if all the lines before that one are severely jammed, then no, there's no reason in the world why anybody would pause. If all the line breaks before that have had commas or have had other punctuation or have been consonant, then yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have a question. You think that's not true?
No, I just know nothing about that. I know nothing about their psyches. I only know just a tiny little bit about, you know, how their brains process syntax. So I couldn't guess on that. I mean, it seems to me that, again, I think that we do find asymmetry satisfying. I think we find it more satisfying than symmetry. Because I think that there's something that has to do with our experience in the world that we don't trust absolute symmetry. But that's just, I mean, you know, that's just my crackpot theory on it. So, I mean, I don't know why. Yeah. Well, almost any art that we think of as alive has a large component of asymmetry. If it doesn't, then there's nothing for the art to struggle with. There's nothing to, you know, all of its move toward pattern then is just self-indulgent. Yeah.
Well, in ancient poetry, it's called a tricolor crescendo.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the individual temperament. And let's look at the Donald Justice poem, where I think you'll find a much greater tolerance for and even eagerness for symmetry. Everybody got this? The Psalm and Lament. The clocks are sorry, the clocks are very sad. One stops, one goes on striking the wrong hours. And the grass burns terribly in the sun. The grass turns yellow secretly at the roots. Now suddenly the yard chairs look empty. The sky looks empty. The sky looks vast and empty. Out on Red Road, the traffic continues. Everything continues. Nor does memory sleep. It goes on. Out spring the butterflies of recollection. And I think that for the first time, I understand the beautiful, ordinary light of this patio, and even perhaps the dark, rich earth of a heart. The bedclothes, they say, had been pulled down. I will not describe it. I do not want to describe it. No, but the sheets were drenched and twisted. They were the very handkerchiefs of grief. Let summer come now with the schoolboy trumpets and fountains, but the years are gone. The years are finally over. And there is only This long desolation of flower-bordered sidewalks that runs to the corner, turns and goes on, that disappears and goes on into the black oblivion of a neighborhood and a world without billboards or yesterdays. Sometimes a sad moon comes and waters the roof tiles, but the years are gone. There are no more years. This one, it seems to me, relies very heavily on symmetry and on parataxis, right? So if you want to say that the Rethke poem was relying primarily on hypotactic syntax, right branching, parallelism, all of that, one thing less important than the other, in order to manage different points in time, right, in order to manage narrative information, I think that we could say that this one relies very heavily on parataxis, on making everything exactly equal. And in part, I think that that's what's so devastating, is the equalness in it. And the way he gets that is through syntax, and his hypotactic sentence comes in the middle. I would say the same thing then in terms of the three, that the three is used here to disturb, and that the two is the thing that gives some sort of completion or satisfaction. So that seems to me to have to do with the temperament. I think that has to do with the temperament of Donald Justice. But look at the opening of this thing. Look at the first 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 couplets. What do you see in regard to pattern? What? They're all. What do you mean they're all sentences? Yes, they're closed. They're all closed. That's right. Some of them have more than one sentence in there, right? But they're all closed. Yep. What else do you see? Yeah, but before, just look at the first five. Repetition. What's repeated? Yes, a lot of lexical repetition. Just the same word over and over again, and crucial words, right? I mean, so we get the same sort of subject, right, repeating itself, and the same verb. R. Anything else repeated? Anything else repeated? Yeah, paratactic. Exactly the same. Exactly the same. Mm-hmm. And likewise, the next sentence. Right, two independent clauses. One stops, one goes on. Which one is more important, Mr. Justice? Which one should I pay attention to? You pay attention to both. They're both equally important. They're both equally important. Equally strong. What else do you notice? How about this little chime that's going throughout? Sorry, very, terribly, secretly, suddenly, empty, empty, empty. Those are little modifying words, right? And they all rhyme with one another. They rhyme with one another. Okay? What else? The grass burns. The grass turns. There's another one. Okay? Two sentences made exactly alike. And the grass burns terribly in the sun. The grass turns yellow secretly at the roots, right? There's another one of your, if you want to call it, comma splice. But we have two independent clauses. It's made exactly alike. This time we've got that normal order, right? We're getting that fundament up just right at the beginning. And we're not even branching very far, are we? No parallelism, no branching out, no just, you know, kind of delivering these fundamental units, paratactic, exactly the same. Now, suddenly, the yard chairs look empty. The sky looks empty. The sky looks vast and empty. Three things. Okay. Why are these, if they're all closed, right, they're all closed couplets, we can move them around, right? Why do they come in this order? Why don't I just start this poem? Suddenly, the yard chairs look empty. The sky looks empty. The sky looks vast and empty. And the grass burns terribly in the sun. The grass turns yellow secretly at the roots. The clocks are sorry. The clocks are very sad. One stops. One goes on striking the wrong hours. What's wrong with that?
You've got to set up a pattern first so it can be
already fun. Okay. And then the three. Okay. And what else? Why else is that not satisfying? Yeah. Absolutely. That's right. That's right. You have a camera angle. That's right. And what's that?
The beginning, the clocks, has to work with the end. The years are gone.
Why do they have to work with them?
Because it
No, it doesn't have to be. It does work that way. But, okay, it would work that way if we open the poem with sometimes a sad moon comes and waters the roof tiles, but the years are gone, there are no more years. We could open the poem that way and end the poem on the clocks are sorry, the clocks are very sad. Why do we not want to do that? Well, hold that question because I want you to look mainly just at these first five and to see where we end up, okay? It's the same thing that we saw in the Rethke poem. We're going to start inside and we're going to move outside, and then the camera is going to open up. It's going to be bigger and bigger with what the camera shows us, so that then the next, after we look at the sky, what's the next thing? Out on Red Road, the traffic continues, everything continues. How does that sentence differ from all the other sentences so far? Yeah, it has that little, it opens with a little something else, right? We have a little prepositional phrase at the beginning. Yep, and we don't have our rhyming stuff. We've only got that repeated word on the continues, the continues. Nor does memory sleep. How's that one different? It's an inversion, flops it around, okay? It goes on. How about our camera eye? Where are we looking now? Looking to the world. Out spring the butterflies of recollection. Where are we looking now? Where are we looking now? Interior, absolutely. How does he get us to the interior? How does he get us to the interior? Memory? Butterflies, absolutely. Butterflies is the subject of the sentence, right? Butterflies spring. There's our fundament. It's turned around. So this is a, you know, this is a little variation that is a pleasure. Out on Red Road, out spring. So we're going to flop it around just like nor does memory sleep. Out spring butterflies. What kind of butterflies, Mr. Justice? The butterflies of recollection. And I think this is the first time now that that the pronoun appears in the poem. Now we're ready for it. Right? We were inside, there were the clocks, then we move outside, we look down, we look at grass, then we look at yard chairs, then we look at the sky, then we look out where the traffic is. It's all out, it's all out. But we know where we are, right? We are looking over his shoulder, and now he turns to address us and says, and I think that hypotactic sentence coming up, your brain goes click, 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 okay. Something coming up that's going to be subordinate to the I think. All right? So the clocks are sorry. The clocks are sad. One stops. One goes on. The grass burns. The grass turns. The yard chairs look empty. The sky looks empty. The sky looks empty. The traffic continues. Everything continues. Memory sleeps. Memory goes on. The butterflies spring out, and I think. That's the order in which we are given these fundaments. And now he has this huge open space in the middle of his poem to give us whatever he needs to give us in terms of information. And I think that for the first time I understand, and this is the first time that we don't close the couplet. You see, the syntax is driving it, is driving the form, right? So he was using all those end stops, small amount, not because of line breaks, but because of how he could use the line to put two things together. Put two things together that were two independent clauses to say they matter equally. They are equal, stop, equal, stop, equal, stop. He's making lines. He's not breaking anything. You hear that? And so now here he's going to let syntax take over the poem. It absolutely takes open the poem and breaks it open. And I think that for the first time I understand what? Your brain is going, I understand what? Give me the object of that. I understand what? I understand the beautiful ordinary light of this patio. Oh, we're on a patio. Ah, we have a speaker. Oh, we have someone grieving. Okay. So what it does is to use syntax that delivers to us the sensibility before we get the dramatic location, and we know exactly where we are. And even perhaps the dark, rich earth. The dark, rich earth next to my patio? No. The dark, rich earth, what? Of a heart. And now he can go back inside the house. It's the only time he goes back to the house. All we've got inside the house is we have those clocks that are sad. And now we're going to go back into the house, and we're going to change the verb tense. This is the first time that we're going to get a past tense. The bedclothes, they say, had been pulled down. This is just like out in the meadow. Where? You know, I found that mouse, right? It's subordinate. The bedclothes, they said, had been pulled down. I will not describe it. I do not want to describe it. And there's his two-ness again, right? And this time, in order to make it subordinate, he puts it in parens, right? It's parenthetical, right? It's parenthetical to everything else being said, but it's said exactly the way he told us about the clocks, right? Yeah, the pairs. No, but the sheets were drenched and twisted. There's his pair. It's in a compound verb. They were the very handkerchiefs of grief. I think that's one of the most devastating lines in American poetry. And in part, it's devastating because it is complete. It is a complete sentence. It is given its own line. It has no echoes with other lines but one, which is what? Very, the very, the sorry, right? Sorry, very. Terribly, secretly, suddenly, empty. So we're going to pick that up again in the rhyme, but there's no caesura. The line is unbroken. They were the very handkerchiefs of grief. What is that? Yes, it is. It's iambic pentameter. Outspring the butterflies of recollection, and I think that for the first time I understand. Is that pentameter? The beautiful ordinary light of this patio, is that pentameter? And even perhaps the dark, rich earth of a heart, is that pentameter? Yes. The others, you know, we have to go in and scan it. And in fact, I have been in to scan it, and I can tell you that there is a pentameter that is a kind of paradigm behind the poem, but you don't hear that. That isn't what you hear. What you hear is the syntax. You hear that syntax that is and not letting you stop, not letting you think, oh, one stops, one goes on striking the wrong hours. No, just let that pattern subside somewhere else. I want you to follow the syntax. And I think that for the first time I understand the beautiful ordinary light of this patio and even perhaps the dark, rich earth of a heart. The bedclothes, they say, had been pulled down. Is that pentameter? The bedclothes, they say, had been pulled down. No, it's 4 feet. I will not describe it. I do not want to describe it. Pentameter? Yes. No, but the sheets were drenched and twisted. Pentameter? No. They were the very handkerchiefs of grief. Yes. Okay, so you see what he's doing with you? He's setting up enough pattern in the very beginning. He does it mainly through his syntax, not through the line length, although with justice it's almost always some sort of control line length, whether it's syllabic or metrical. But he wants you to hear a syntax. That's what he is ordering. That's what he's using for pattern and variation. And that's also what he's using to structure this poem. So at the very beginning, the sentence blows the poem open, and he's able to give us the deathbed scene. That's the deathbed scene right there. We go back into the house. A previous time, this is when she died. This is when she died, and I'm not going to stay there. Let summer come now, and we go back to the present tense, and we go back out on the patio. Let summer come now with its schoolboy trumpets and fountains. But the years are gone. The years are finally over. You hear that pentameter now? Now we can do it. And there is only... Huh? What happened? Let summer come now with its schoolboy trumpets and fountains. But the years are gone. The years are finally over. Great, Mr. Justice, give me some more of that pentameter. We love pattern. And there is only. It's the shortest line in the poem. And only, of course, rhymes with very, sorry, terribly, secretly, suddenly, empty, memory, ordinary. Right? Very. And there is only. There is only what? Your brain will not let you stay there. Your brain will not let you stay there. There's no chance in the world that this lineation could be seen as parsing or punctuating. Because everything in your module up there says what? What? There is only what? There is only this long desolation of flower-bordered sidewalks that runs to the corner. He's not through with his subordination. He's not through with the right branching. Turns and goes on. That disappears and goes on. Where's that camera now? What are we looking at now? What are we looking at now? Yeah, I mean, this has to be the imagination, right? I mean, if you're standing in the patio, you can't see what happens after it turns a corner, right? So huge, It just kind of opened up the palm with that right branching that runs to the corner, turns, and goes on. Have we heard that before? Oh, yes. We heard that before. One stops, one goes on. One stops, one goes on. Okay, so sidewalks runs to the corner. The desolation runs to the corner, turns, and goes on. That disappears and goes on into the black oblivion of a neighborhood and a world without billboards or yesterday's. Long sentence. Long sentence, right branching. He's just absolutely pulling us through this poem to oblivion. That's where we ended up, right? Oblivion, the black oblivion of a neighborhood and a world without yesterdays, a world with no past. Yeah, that's a huge statement. And I think that we follow it, we buy it, because the order in which information has been released to us. If this poem started with that sentence, we would be on the outside of it. If this poem opened up, I think, for the first time, I understand the beautiful, ordinary light of this patio. And how many of us would start a poem that way, right? Locate the speaker. Here's the speaker. Speaker's out on the patio. Speaker's grieving, blah, 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 blah. And make statements that the reader can only observe from the outside, okay? But put in the middle like that and driven by the syntax. And now he's perfectly free to come back around and to give us symmetry, because that is his temperament. Sometimes a sad moon comes and waters the roof tiles, but the years are gone. There are no more years. Gone after goes on, goes on, goes on, goes on, gone. That's the finality. That's why that has to be there. It couldn't be the opening, couplet. Okay, we have about 4 minutes. If there's anything you want to, anything you want to observe or questions, yeah. Oh, with Donald Justice, I'd say 90% of it is conscious. Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, with somebody else, maybe not. I would think, you know, probably with Rethke, I think not. The Metamouse was written at a time when he was just really trying to figure out about how to let go of Trimeter, which is what he had written so much in and which he really stole from Yeats. And I think that he understood that that was an impediment to his own voice. And so he's trying in a lot of the poems around the same time to try to figure out something that he can do with an open form. And so this is nothing but sheer speculation, but I would speculate there that that he's thinking about it less. There's also less patterning in his than in Justice. Justice is thinking about it all the time. Almost every poem that he writes, he thinks about it in terms of meter. He thinks about it in terms of the syllabic count. Why would he not also think about it in terms of syntax? That would be hard for me to believe. Yeah. Yeah, except, you know, I would advise you, though, not to worry about those kinds of things that have to do with thematic development, because they're not things that you can steal, one. And two, we are very eager to move always to some sort of justification of the denotative. We will do that. We want to do that. I can only tell you that if you go and read Justice, you find the patterning that I'm talking about over and over and over again in poems that are not titled Psalm and Lament. So we sort of like that. We sort of go, oh, Psalm and Lament. Ah, then it must be, you know, for biblical. But then how about Farewell to the Hawks? To the Hawks, that poem, Farewell, the Bell is Beginning to Ring, which is even more highly patterned than this one, because that's in a line that is only 5 syllables long. He does it there, and I don't think he's after, you know, anything biblical. So be a little careful about the, you know, intentional fallacy. Okay, so I guess it's lunch.